Conference record has joined the conference.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's topical call on what to expect out of birth to three early intervention. And we're pleased as punch to have Roxanne Romanek, our State Part C family liaison, presenting to us tonight. If for some reason it gets really noisy where you're at, you can either mute your line or press star 6. To mute it, and Roxanne, I'm going to assume that questions are available at any time.
Yes, that would be fine.
Okay, that's great. So with that, Roxanne, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and I have to put in a little tidbit that Roxanne is also from Edgeley, North Dakota, so Roxanne and I have known each other for a very, very long time. So with that, Roxanne, go ahead and take it away.
I just really appreciate the fact that you didn't say how many years.
Oh, of course not. That would give away both of our ages.
Exactly. Well, welcome, everybody. It's, I have to admit that this is my first time doing this topical call as the main presenter, and I didn't really think through the whole issue that I can't see all of you, and that's going to be difficult for me. But, yes, please do ask questions if you want to. We sent out a PowerPoint ahead of time, and so if you have that in front of you, and I'll try to just kind of keep you in pace with where we're at. I think, Janine, if people didn't get the PowerPoint and want it, does that end up getting posted on your website?
It does. That will be posted as well. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I have this phone on speakerphone, so everybody that's with me can hear. Does anybody who can't hear me want to let me know?
You're sounding good here.
Yeah, you sound good too, Denine.
All right, good.
Okay. So I'm going to start out. We had a cover slide about what to expect out of birth to three, and the next slide says, why do we have early intervention? And I just want to provide just a tidbit of history about early intervention. It is connected to the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And way back, before I was even married, which is over 25 years ago now, there were some state incentive grants from the federal government to try to serve infants and toddlers with disabilities. And North Dakota took part in that incentive grant, and it really started our home visiting services that we provided to infants and toddlers. And in 1986, a small portion to the Individuals with Disabilities Act, or IDEA, was added to the law when they reauthorized it, and that was the first sign that we saw in the law of services to infants and toddlers. So what we have now, and which is virtually an education law, is that we have services from birth up to the age of 21. The law is really divided into little sections. And interestingly enough, those services that pertain to students who are 3 to 21 is Part B of the law. And those services for infants and toddlers is Part C. So oftentimes you'll hear early intervention being called Part C, and that's really just referring to the section in the law. The next slide talks about North Dakota's lead agency. The federal government tells each state that they have to assign a lead agency, one of their state departments, to be the host for early intervention services. And that's very different than special education service, because we all know the host is the Department of Public Instruction, but they get to choose that in Part C. So you'll find if you go to South Dakota, the State Department that's providing guidance, issuing policies and procedures, is their Public Instruction Department, or that's true in Minnesota as well. But in North Dakota, our lead agency is the Department of Human Services. And we actually have to file that with our federal government. We have to have it in writing. And I think in that case, the governor has to actually sign off. And every state, interestingly, because the law was really written to try to coordinate services for infants and toddlers, that was the intent, which was very different than Part B of IDEA, which is like a provision of services. Every state has really different funding packages. So you can go to a different state and try to compare apples with how they fund early intervention services. It's going to look very different than North Dakota. But essentially right now, we're paying for the services through some money that we get in from the federal government, which we call a federal Part C grant. We access Medicaid, and we have some state general funds that our legislature gives us every 2 years. The way that early intervention is set up in North Dakota that many of you may or may not know is that we're regionally based. So the single point of entry is the human service centers in each region. What's kind of interesting is probably 3 years ago, there was a human service center. Did somebody say something? Okay, there was a human service center in every region and one infant development program. But what's happening in some regions is that we're starting to have multi-providers of early intervention services. So right now in Region 7 or the Bismarck region, we actually have three providers of infant development services. And so families actually have a choice. Fargo area has two providers. The providers of infant development services really have to be licensed through the Department of Human Services to provide the services the way they do. And to be licensed, they have to follow all the rules and regulations that are set out by the state and then also by the federal government. The things that IDEA says has to happen in Part C is that families, and I'm on the next slide, is that families get to access or have access to a multidisciplinary evaluation or assessment in all areas of development. We often see that happen when families or children are first referred to early intervention, and that might happen to determine eligibility. If a child would come in to early intervention with a diagnosis, let's say of spina bifida, we would still have to do a multidisciplinary assessment in all areas of development, and that would include vision and hearing to make sure that we've made sure that we kind of understand the child's skill level in all areas. IDEA also says that the services must be research-based. There is procedural safeguards in Part C, just like there are procedural safeguards in Part B. So that means that parents have rights around certain types of things. They also, there are specific things we'll talk a little later about what they have to give consent for. They have the rights provided to them around confidentiality and some of the provisions in education around confidentiality. They have the right to figure out how they can resolve disputes. So if they have a conflict with the program that they're working with, there's a way that they can resolve those. Just like in special education, you can't make any decisions about a child's service delivery package without the parents. So there has to be parent prior notice on any decision making. We have to develop an IFSP, that's a requirement, and we have to assure that there's a timely initiation of services. So an IFSP has to be developed within 45 days of the time that we take a referral on a child, and that means the moment that they call into the Human Service Center. We really can't be over that 45 days unless it's due to a parent reason. And then once we develop that IFSP, we're really responsible as early intervention to start those services as soon as we can. And there really isn't any reason why, but let's say that we decide that we're starting infant development services and then we want additional speech therapy involved. and we'll set a date for that 3 months out. The program has to be very diligent about making sure that that speech therapy starts on the date that they all decided about it within the IFSP. On the next slide, the other things that IDEA says about Part C is that there has to be a thorough assessment of a family's resources, priorities, and concerns. The law and the regulations actually go as far as to say there needs to be a designated tool that's done by a qualified personnel. So it's really up to the state to decide what that looks like. But different than an individual education plan, an individual family service plan really takes into consideration the needs of the family along with the needs of the child. IDEA talks about services need to be delivered in the natural environment. That's actually in the law and, of course, you know, explained in the regulations, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit more later. There has to be service coordination to assure services are in place across the board for the child and the family. In North Dakota, that service is provided through the case management or the program management system through the Human Service Centers. So every family, and we'll talk about this a little bit about North Dakota, would have a program manager. We have to assure that all our staff are adequately prepared and trained. The law and the regulations are very specific about assisting families with transition. And this is particularly true, of course, at the age of two and beyond as we're trying to move families and children towards transition to out of early intervention. And then it also speaks a lot about interagency coordination. So we need to coordinate with early Head Start, Head Start, child care, other early childhood programs, other family support programs like WIC, Medicaid, funding sources, all of those kinds of things. So let's talk about North Dakota's early intervention system a little bit. I realized as I'm looking at my slides now that we didn't talk a lot about eligibility, but eligibility essentially is going to be looking, we're going to be looking for delays with a child or a high-risk condition, which there is a high probability that it will lead to delays. We have one at-risk category. And that would be if a child has a parent who has a developmental disability. And the difference between high risk and at risk is really a definition that's in the regulations. For some states, they might have a high risk condition that we would consider at risk. If we want to talk about North Dakota's early intervention system now, I think we talked about the single point of entry is the Human Service Center. So if people are interested in making referrals, typically those are going to come into the Human Service Centers, and then they'll make some decisions. They'll do an intake and make some decisions about how to triage essentially that case and how to help the family from the get-go. So I think I mentioned before that every family is going to have a program manager that's assigned to them right at intake. The early intervention system is really an umbrella of sorts. And it's really the program manager's job to work with that family to try to figure out what services under that umbrella this family needs. Now, one of those services in that umbrella is our infant development services, and those are what we're familiar with. That's the BSEPs of the world, the Southeast Kids, kids out of Dickinson. Those are those infant development programs that we're fairly familiar with. But it is true that families may want to access that service, but they don't have to. But always they're going to keep that program manager. They may have a situation where what their need in their family is the need for in-home support or home health nursing for some reason. And so it's going to be up to that program manager to really sort that out with the family and figure out what can be, you know, what's true for them and what's not. So we've got under this umbrella, you know, service coordination, and then we have infant development, which can give you access to specific disciplines. So speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, early childhood special education. But what we have to remember is that what Part C says is that really there are about 16 services listed in the law that families can access and should be able to access. So it's not a defined list based on who your provider is. It really is sitting down and understanding the law and knowing what you really need, because if you have a child with significant behavior issues, and even though your infant development provider does not have a behavior analyst or a psychologist on your team, it's possible that they still have to coordinate and figure out how to get that service for you. So it's really driven by what comes out of the IFSP development. The other things that happen with North Dakota Early Intervention is that right now North Dakota runs that program under what they call their home and community-based waiver. And so families have the opportunity to actually access Medicaid without anybody looking at their income or assets once they're found eligible for services. And then obviously there's other, you know, services that they can purchase once they have Medicaid. But then we're also able to access things like in-home supports, assistance with out-of-town travel and lodging, out-of-pocket medical expenses. And so there's other things that are available to families because they're on the home and community-based waiver. Obviously, teams can brainstorm about other things like parent-to-parent support, information resources like Deneen Works for Family Voices. There could be a whole myriad of other family support types of services that might be available. So all of this comes down to, and we're going to talk about the individual family service plan a little bit more, but obviously that's a service in itself, whether DD program management does the individual service plan or whether infant development essentially leads it and supports the program manager doing the IFSP. Essentially, because of the law, the service provision is all in natural environments. And that's really our requirement. So we have to justify an early intervention if we can't serve a child in their natural environment. And we talk about natural environments. It really could be with their home caregivers. It could be in their daycare setting. It could be in a small private little preschool they might be going to. It might be out in the community with the family. It could be in a whole bunch of different services. But what we know about least restrictive environment in Part B, we know that natural environment is very similar to that. Right now, North Dakota really operates on what the field knows as a primary service provider model. So in most cases, if they choose to use infant development services, the infant development providers attempt to try to match the needs of the child closely with the background of the personnel that's going in to work with them primarily. And then we bring in the additional therapies in kind of a consultative mode. So if Amy is sitting here with me now, if she was my home visitor, I might want to have a speech therapist as well, and that speech therapist would come out with Amy and myself so that she would benefit from the information the speech therapist would provide and be able to carry it out, you know, because she's going to be coming more often. So I'm on a slide now that says family involvement, family-directed, and family-centered. I think Deneen and I could both attest to the fact that the spirit of family involvement really started with Part C many, many years ago and really has continued that flavor. And we know that because the basis of services is an individual family service plan. So the law provides for full involvement from the family. So you are a provider, you cannot make a decision about adding speech therapy to my family service plan or taking speech therapy out of my family service plan. You have to do that with me. There's consent for participation. There's actually what we'll be implementing kind of in a new way in North Dakota is the consent to use public or private insurance. So families have Medicaid because of our services. We're at the point because of the way that the law and the regulations are reading that we actually have to ask some permission to use that public insurance or the Medicaid. We have to have permission from families to involve certain people when they're transitioning. So if families don't want their local school district involved, that's their choice. They can make that choice. There's consents for evaluation and assessment. So if families choose that they don't want to have an assessment, like let's say annually, that's their choice to make that decision. So there's the family involvement piece is fully supported in the law in regards to making decisions around services. What's interesting is the concept of being family directed. As we know with Part B of IDEA, that parents are an equal participating member on the team. And that's very true with Part C as well. So families are participating, but they also, the decisions are made within the team. So there really has to be some kind of consensus within the team. However, the difference in Part C is that families are at the table and the service plan addresses their needs. So they have to prioritize their concerns and look at their resources and considering how to deliver services. So it's probably closer to being family directed because of that than certainly anything that happens after 3 years of age in special education. Certainly, I think that the field of early intervention across the United States is knowledgeable about family-centered practices, whether that's fully implemented. There's no dictates in the law that talks about services being family-centered, but the just kind of the mutual or kind of the essential essence of that, of the program itself, knowing that you're there to develop a plan for the family to help them, help their child learn and grow, lends it to be more family-centered than when that's not present. So I'm going to skip a slide. I think I just want to hit on, I'm on a slide now that says, how should I be expected to be treated? And really, I think as parents, the expectation is that you would have staff available to you that would be active listeners. They're the ones that should be there to listen to what we call that gut response. We've all had those where we know that something's just not right, or we're not sure about asking somebody a question that we're not, sure about how they're going to take, that the service really is about trying to help parents learn in those early years how to become an advocate for your child. So there is a lot of prompting, I think, through listening about, you listening to yourself, respecting what you're thinking, and helping you act on that. You can expect that you should have access to all the information that your service providers have access to, and you can make a request to look at your charts. You can be ready to ask for any clarification that you need, and that you can expect that there should be some response to your needs as a family. So I'm going to just take a quick little stop and see if anybody has any questions. because then we're going to transition to talk about developing an IFSP. How am I doing, Janine?
Doing great, Roxanne.
Bismarck folks are not sleeping yet.
Oh, I love it. Any questions for Roxanne so far? All right, Roxanne, carry on.
Thanks, Nate. It's actually kind of fun. Okay, so let's talk about what should be in an IFSP, what you would expect. Individual family service plans are developed as soon as children and families enter early intervention, and then on an annual basis. But it's a regulation that we also review the IFSPs every 6 months. And that six-month review is not a full-blown IFSP meeting, but really contains many of the same features. Really, your IFSP team should be present at your reviews, but they're not going to get a new write-up of your individual family service plan. You can expect that you should get a hard copy document. If you haven't gotten a hard copy document, there's a problem and you need to ask for it. Our staff in early intervention have about 15 days to get that processed. And so anytime after 2 weeks after your meeting is okay to be asking for that document in your hand. You should always receive one. And I'd say, you know, it's a good idea to hang on to them. The IFSPs really do deliver. They're a kind of a written contract between you and the providers about what services you're going to have, how often that's going to happen. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. And so it's almost like having a contract with a building contractor. I mean, you're going to want to keep it. You're going to hang on to it. You want to know what's in it. You should see documented who was at your meeting and how they participated. And then also there may be people that participated by providing a report or providing some kind of medical information, and you should see all that documented on your IFSP. One of the things that I remember that I was going to say earlier is that annually the programs are required to do an assessment of skills. So this could potentially, you'd have evaluation information at the intake, and then annually we have to provide a multidisciplinary, so at least two staff with different disciplines, and they have to cover all developmental domains. So from that assessment, and typically they're going to use some type of a tool, and work with you and your child in their natural setting to try to gain information about what they're doing, what skills they have, how they're functioning in their environment. And really, it shouldn't be a lot of surprises because it should be very similar to the information that you're getting on an ongoing basis. But what you'll see in the IFSP then is that they'll actually break down that assessment into a discussion about a child's strengths and function, and then their strengths and their challenges, and within that they have to kind of talk about function. So instead of saying, for example, I'm going to use this a couple of times and you'll be tired of it, you don't really care that much about stacking blocks, but what is it that stimulates that skill in their day-to-day activities that tells you they have the same fine motor skills to be able to do that, which, you know, that's the most important thing. So you want to see that discussion written up very functionally, like so-and-so always waves to, you know, their dad as they're going to leave for work, and that's a favorite activity of theirs. The IFSP is always going to contain a discussion about the family's priorities, resources, and concerns. It may talk about things like what are some, you know, strengths in your family that are already helping your child grow and learn. Like, you're already really excited about using sign language. And so your family's actively using sign language with this little person that's in their family. You also, we need to ask about general resources. So it's important to know that if for some reason I have a very high outstanding medical bill, that your IFSP team has talked about that, and that you're able to get some assistance around trying to figure out how to take care of that medical bill. So those are not specifically due to the child, but in, as a whole, as a family, they're definitely going to affect how you function. You also then should see functional outcomes that are based on your concerns, how you've prioritized those concerns, and that you should know how they're going to be met and how the team as a whole is going to address them. And then from those outcomes, you really want to say, okay, what services are needed to carry out the plan? So maybe we really need to have occupational therapy come in to work on self-feeding. We need the skills of an occupational therapist to figure that out. Or we need the skills of a physical therapist to figure out how to position somebody in their high chair, because we really want them to eat with the family, because that's our goal as a family, to all have a meal together. And so in that IFSP, you also want to see who's providing the service. So that's not going to be, it's not going to list Roxanne Romanek specific in there, but it's going to say what agency I'm from and where can I expect that that service is going to come from. How often, that means the frequency, intensity, and duration. So that should mean, you know, two one-hour sessions every week for 6 months. But I know that when you come to my house, you're going to be here for an hour, and that I can expect that you're going to come twice in a week. And if not, you're going to let me know. We're going to figure that out. But when I look at my IFSP, that's what I should say, what I should see. We also, that plan should say how the services are going to be paid for and where the service is going to be carried out. So, and then also a discussion of when will we review the plan, and if your child is over, now when I did the slides, I didn't catch this, but essentially once your child's over 2 years, 5 months, the IFSP has to address transition out of early intervention. And that's kind of like if you care as a parent or not. You don't have much choice in that, because by regulation and law, we're required to make sure that you transition gently and softly out of early intervention into whatever your next adventure is going to be. I threw in a couple slides that just, shows you what you're looking for in a functional outcome. And you, as a family, the reason why, you know, you want your these outcomes to be functional is because they're easier for you to get excited about. They really should be about what you want to see happen. And it's really about asking yourself, because I think most of us as parents, we've said, why do we ever teach this child to talk? Like, my favorite story about that is that Elizabeth, after some direct therapy sessions with an occupational therapy, chose to take a permanent marker and make X's all across the back seat on my leather expedition seat. So I'm thinking, why did I want this service in our life? But essentially, I mean, we want very, Kim's laughing because she knows Elizabeth too well. You know, we want them to be things that we're interested in, that we see very often. It's very easy to document that it's happening. So a good one is we want this child to be able to walk out to the van and get in the car seat so we don't have to carry them, because I have a new baby, and it would be just much more easy if they could do that on their own. Instead of what, saying we want them to walk 25 feet across the kitchen or the living room floor. We want function in there. So you want to be really involved. You really don't want your IFSP team to walk away and say, well, we'll write the outcomes and then we'll let you look at them and, you can see what you think. You want to be really involved, because when you're actually looking at progress and measuring, you want something that you can just tell right away that they're doing that. There was lots of growth. So the one thing that families, I just left a support group meeting, and again, I said, I don't think we'll ever solve this, but the thing that families struggle with a lot is trying to figure out what kinds of services they need and how much. And I think those of you who might not have a child with special needs, if you just think about your own children, you know, that whole decision about should we do gymnastics and dance or just let them play in the backyard? You know, so there is some components of that. I mean, but it's heightened. It's more intense, I think, when you have children with special needs. I think that one of the things that helps you know what type of service you might need is, again, that review of your outcomes and the strategies and the criteria. So the outcome really might be about walking out to the van. So do you need some involvement from the physical therapist? Or do you feel like the people that you already have involved can help with that? But if you have major motor involvement, high tone, really low tone, you might want to use a physical therapist to help you with that. You also need to consider as far as what type of service you need and what resources you have available. But you can't always let that limit you. I mean, you kind of have to push the system sometimes to say, okay, let's consider all our options here, not just what is in one package. Sometimes we have to look at services are medically necessary. And I would say in early intervention, always ask your early intervention team about services before you just decide to go out and get it or pay for it yourself. Because the service might be available within the early intervention system, may make more sense, it might be more concise, but it may be that you really do want a second opinion, and so getting a service that would supply additional information to you would make you feel better, so you use that to make a decision. How much do you need? There's obviously no magical answer. You know, obviously we all have caps of some sort set by somehow, whether it's how much money we have or what our insurance will pay for, what the early intervention system will really agree to. But I think some important tips are to think about whether or not there's a lot of new information. So have there been some developments with your child that are brand new and you have tons of questions? So that may mean that you want more services right then because you just have a lot more needs at the time. You might want to consider how many outcomes you have. You might want to consider if your child's in a lot of different routines or settings. And sometimes if there's outcomes that are very urgent, like we really need to get to these right now, we've got some safety issues, and I need to get this figured out. And sometimes you have to consider if the child really does need one-on-one support to participate or interact, because sometimes that will drive how much service is needed. So, okay, I'm going to pause really quick, Denise, and see if anybody has questions. I feel like now you've taken on that responsibility for me.
It's all right. Does anyone have any questions of Roxanne thus far?
There's nobody else on the phone, is there?
There is.
Okay. So let's talk right now a little bit about, as we were just talking about services, the types and the frequency. I wanted to spend a little time on information that's kind of come out of the early intervention Part C field. And so it kind of what happens is it ends up dictating how we're delivering services in North Dakota, and it's how we are trying to figure out, like, what does natural environment really mean? When you think about natural environment, it really is kind of dictates the thoughts of a place. Because I think we think about that when it comes to special education. That least restrictive environment has always been about a place. It's like, is the child in the classroom when they're getting services, or are they in the speech therapist room? Or it comes down to a place. But I think the field of early intervention has tried to shift us to thinking about really about what's happening for the child, and that the less that we mess with their natural occurring activities. So you know what it's like when you're a baby. It's sleep and eating and rocking and burping. The less we mess with that, the better it is for the child. And so it's really how to inject service delivery or strategies within that versus pulling them out of that natural occurring routine and doing something to them, like doing a therapy intervention or whatever. And so I think what the field has done is that they've really said, be smart when you're thinking about this. Don't just take it for granted that more is better, like more direct services or more intervention from therapists. Just be very intentful and think through how you're using those professionals and how they're intervening with you and your family. Basically, what we know now, just basic principles, is that young children learn best when they're taught every day, within their regular routine and with familiar people. I think all of us on the phone would not be surprised about that. And that learning is most effective when that learning has a purpose for that child and really has a meaning for you and them. So, good example, what do you do in the bath time? You pour, you scoop, you pop bubbles, you say pop when you're popping bubbles. All of that is really natural to you as a parent, and sometimes it's just changing the way that you do it slightly to accommodate the needs for that child. It might be just getting them propped up in the bathtub correctly, and that's all that's needed so that they're upright versus sitting, laying down and not having the opportunity to do stuff with their hands. Again, it's about embedding those activities. And this, they talk a lot about universal design for learning in elementary and secondary ed, and really this is exactly what we're talking about. So I did have a slide in here that talks a little bit about, I hope any of you that are following along with me are just going, oh my gosh, where is she? Because now I've given it up. I'm trying to find my slide. Is that that we really have to look, especially with little kids, because we're more apt to try to impact their development directly. So we're more apt to what I call try to change the child or grow the child directly. So it's like you water them, you primp their, dust off their leaves, instead of thinking about what's the soil like. But we're more apt to, when kids are little, try to do something directly to them to impact their development than we are to think about accommodation. So it's exactly what I was just saying about. So somebody who isn't sitting when they should be sitting, what experiences are they missing? So even though we're going to try to teach them how to sit, we want to get them into sitting at times when other kids their age would be sitting, so they're able to do the same kinds of things. So your staff that you have for early intervention need to be smart about both aspects. They really need to know about typical development, and they really need to know about disability involvement and how to accommodate for a child who has a disability or delay. I'm going to back up now that I've kind of gone off on that. Again, I would say to folks that, if you're a parent on the phone listening, think about those environments, those other caregivers in your child's life and those other environments that they go into, and don't hesitate to ask your early intervention staff to think about those environments as well and those other caregivers, because they're great opportunities. What I said before is that your child's learning every moment that they're awake. And but I heard today, and I don't know that this is true, that somebody said that we need to see well when we're sleeping because our dreams are more vivid and that that's important for cognition. I don't know. I thought, okay, why did somebody spend money on this? But anyway, so who knows? Maybe we need to do early intervention in our sleep too. So I have a slide about what you can expect, and I'm going to go through those few tips, and we're about 12 minutes to. And I think that what you can expect is that you need, that you can see the service providers as often as they're written on the IFSP. So if for a reason somebody says they cancel every week and they're not showing up, that's a problem and you can do something about it. And I think the thing to know for parents is that it's better, you don't want to throw the baby, literally, the baby out with the bathwater. Early intervention isn't a bad service. You may have a provider that's not meeting your expectations and ask to shift that up and change that out versus throwing away the service. And here's the problem with it, we just talked about this tonight too, is that everybody that works in service provision is doggone nice. We're all nice. And so it's really hard to shift that up. But what's really true about our kiddos is that they're changing all the time. And so it's really possible. So you might start out with a home visitor or a primary early interventionist, and within 10 months, you're really feeling like that primary person is not really meeting your needs. And it's okay. Your job as a parent is to really figure out how to meet those needs for your child and your family. And it might be the nicest person in the world. But that isn't what this is about. So I think that the other thing that I just want to point out too is that at any point that you want to change your service delivery system, that happens within your IFSP meeting. So you can ask for a review of that IFSP meeting at any point, and your professionals really have to set up that plan review for you. And you can change up who's listed to do the service. You can change up the types and numbers of outcomes that are on it. You can change the amount. And again, all of it's done with the consensus and working with your team. But just so that you don't stay with something that you're unhappy with, you can do something about it. We didn't talk a lot about transition at 3, but actually the system's set up so that really there should be a review for you that happens every time there's a major transition in your life or in that child's life. So if you move from Fargo to Bismarck, a review is necessary so that we make sure that you know all the supports that are available to you. Let's say that you are temporarily deployed, and so your child's going to live with their grandparent. That's another reason why we would do a change, or we would do a review in an IFSP if that child has a significant change in caregivers. If a child's hospitalized for a long period of time, we have to do a review when they come home from the hospital. That could be right at birth, or it could be at any point while they're in. The law really speaks to, of course, this transition at 3 that I've alluded to a few times. And there's very specific steps and strategies that early intervention staff and the special education staff in your local school district have to follow. I know Kathy Harstad did a topical call on it, over a month ago, and did a great job, because there's a lot for families to think about when they're having to make that shift, learning about what an IEP is, learning the difference between Part C and Part B services, just generally learning new people, getting new people involved with their child. And, you know, basically it can be a really scary time. So the regulations and the law really have listened to parents to say, do as much as you can to help us prepare. So people can expect that that's going to happen. Just so that you know, on the very last slide, there are 3 points about what family outcomes are in early intervention. And really, we have to report on these to the federal government every year. We have to publicly report them. If you go to the North Dakota Early Intervention website, you'll see how we're doing on this in North Dakota. And each program has will end up having a report card on these as well. And they really are to know and act on your rights under IDEA and other appropriate laws, be able to effectively communicate your child's needs, and to help your child develop and learn. And so those are really, the efforts that happen in earlier intervention really have to add up to those things. So we know that most of the time families aren't naturally born advocates. I would say Bruce and I cut our eye teeth on med tech people in the hospital, because as soon as somebody would come in and try to take her blood and they were bad at it, we just kick them out of the room. And so it was like my first lesson in being not nice or mean, because I struggle with doing that. So, you're not generally used to having to advocate, but once you have a little one with lots of needs, you know, it's a different story. And sometimes you need help with even taking that first step forward. And that's our job in early intervention. It's not just about child development, but it's about family development as well. So that's it, Janine. That's all I have. Because now I'm hoarse.
What was that?
Now I'm hoarse.
Oh, sorry. Anybody have any questions? Those at BSEP or on the phone, does anyone have any questions for Roxanne?
I have to go away with 3 questions, otherwise I don't get paid. Oh, wait, I'm not getting paid.
I don't hear any from the BSEP group either.
Laura's just going to ask them right now.
Who does the family contact? Do they have to talk to the primary early interventionist if they're not happy with services, or can they talk to someone else? Like, who do they approach if they're not happy with services?
Actually, in this region, I don't know if that's true. And at BSEP, they actually receive information on how to do that. But a lot of times that program manager, or as the regulations refer to them, the service coordinator, is really like the quality assurance person. So obviously I think it's more difficult to talk directly to the person that you're not happy with services. So they have a number of avenues, but the program manager is the natural one. They obviously can talk to the director of the program. Most of the regions right now have parents working on staff, and that experienced parent that they call experienced parents, and that person can just help them talk through it. So any of those, I think. And there really isn't anything in the law that says, which, you know, I think for many of us, and it's true in IDEA as well, that says, you know, if you don't like this person, they have to change them. But a lot of times, if you aren't satisfied with that service, you have to equate it actually into what you're not receiving, what's not happening because of it. So, and sometimes it's just this gut level feeling that you don't really like, you know, that relationship's uncomfortable. And I think generally in early intervention, people are going to listen to that, because it's such an intimate service, because they're in your home and with you on a, you know, very intimate basis. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got 1 question.
Well, that was one. Do we have any others?
I have a question about annual testing.
Yes.
You said parents don't have to go through it. Will they still continue to qualify? Because I know, like, when I was in early intervention, it was just
what we do. You do. Yeah. Right, but you have to get consent for it.
Right.
So if a parent didn't consent to it, I don't know what we would do. I think we would document that consent wasn't given, and that we and document the fact that the parent was instructed on what this potentially means, in the sense of you don't have all the information that you probably could have to develop the IFSP. But at this point, we do not reassess, or we would not dismiss. We don't reassess for dismissal purposes in our state, nor do I think we would dismiss in that situation. Wouldn't be dependent on the completion of that assessment. But you always take it for granted.
Right.
You just move into it.
I think it was like, you know, in elementary school, when it's 3-year reeval time, if no one has questions, they don't do testing.
Right. And regs don't really read like that in Part C. But what's happened in the new regs, Part C just got new regulations in October. They're much stronger on parent consent. A lot of stronger language about parent consent for all of the areas that they need to give consent on. So that's why I overemphasized it, I think. It was a good question. Mm-hmm. But it is a good point, too, that I didn't raise, is that there is no assessment done for dismissal. So once kids are in early intervention, they're in until they're 3, unless the family chooses to not, because obviously it's a voluntary service. And that's not true in all states. Most other states reassess for dismissal or to continue, however you want to call it. It's the same thing.
And then other states that they were doing well, and they did the annual reval, and they said, oh, wow, Johnny's doing well. So
they'll end up dismissing them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, that's 2 questions.
All right. Do we have a third?
Well, thanks, everybody. It was great sharing information with you, and I did not put my contact information on the PowerPoint, I just realized. So I think, Deneen, I'll send you an updated copy.
Okay.
That's on there.
All right.
Go on it. I think most people know how to find me.
Does anybody on the line need Roxanne's number?
Today?
Yeah, today.
Oh, seriously. Okay.
Yeah. Just send me an updated copy, and that's the one I'll put on the web.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Deneen, for offering your line.
Thanks for doing a tremendous job, Roxanne.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 2 minutes. The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.